Plus 49.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Plus 49. I'm Aline Bacher, and for this show, I'm gonna be your host. And as always, we've got some stories, insights, and conversations from across Germany and beyond. We're at the start of August, though with the gray skies and steady rain, it's feeling more like late October than midsummer. But that doesn't stop us. In this week's news, we look at growing concerns over Germany's education system. PISA chief Andreas Schleicher says it's failing migrant children and calls for earlier, better language support and smarter funding for schools. Meanwhile, the EU gears up to launch its new digital border system, and Poland is extending controls at its German border. In our culture segment, we dive into the top 10 contenders for Jugendwort des Jahres. From low-key to tough, we explore what this year's slang says about how young people are communicating in 2025. And in our interview, we're joined by Andrea Lungulescu from the Principal Recruiter. We talk job hunting in Berlin, how gender still shapes careers, and why salary negotiation isn't just about numbers. So, let's get started. In this week's news segment, we're starting with a critical voice from the global education stage. Andreas Schleicher, Director of Education at the OECD and head of the PISA study, has warned that Germany's education system is still failing to meet the needs of children with a migrant background. In an interview with Stuttgarter Zeitung, he pointed to a lack of early language support and a mislocation of resources that leave schools in disadvantaged areas without the tools they need. Schleicher also expressed cautious support for a debated idea from Education Minister Katrin Prien, migration quotas in schools to avoid over-concentration. He stressed that data-driven, flexible solutions are a key. Meanwhile, the EU is digitizing its borders. The long-delayed entry-exit system, or EES, is finally rolling out, replacing passport stamps for non-EU travelers with biometric scans. From October 12, visitors from countries like the US, UK, and Canada will have their data stored for up to 3 years to help track overstays and reduce fraud. Think of it as a digital gatekeeper. And a preview of what's to come with ETIAS, the EU's travel pre-clearance system, launching in 2026. Over in Poland, border controls with Germany have been extended until at least October 4th. The move comes in response to Germany's own tightened checks aimed at curbing irregular migration. Tensions remain high as both countries balance internal security and open border policy. And finally, the weather. We usually don't talk about it, but this summer has us reaching for our raincoats. Thanks to a stubborn low-pressure system hovering over central Europe, much of Germany is still stuck in a cycle of showers and cold breezes. But here are some good news. Forecasts suggest summer might return after August 11, with sunshine and 30-degree days ahead. So, fingers crossed, this summer might turn into a real summer after all. Every year, Germany's youth get the spotlight as they vote on the Jugendwort des Jahres, the youth word of the year. Now in its 18th edition, the contest organized by Langscheid Verlag offers a snapshot of how language evolves in the hands of Gen Z. Voting is now open for the top 10 contenders, selected from thousands of submissions by teens aged 11 to 20. Until September 2nd, young people can vote for the phrase that best captures their everyday lingo. So, let's take a closer look at this year's top 10 nominees. Some entries play with tone and ambiguity. Take low-key, which is borrowed from English, meaning a bit or understated. Or that's crazy, used when someone has no idea how to respond. You can basically think of it as Gen Z's polite wild. Meanwhile, rede, which basically means preach, gives vocal support when someone speaks a bold truth. Others are more tongue-in-cheek. Guten, a not-so-subtle euphemism for self-pleasure, has somehow made the list, while sebau, which is, I think, gamer language, and it's short for shut your bitch ass up, shows how even crude language can get a cuter rebrand. Then there are the evergreens. Digger, meaning friend or dude, remains a popular term of address, and Schere is still used in gaming circles as a gesture of accountability, basically saying my bad. Rounding out the list are checkst du, used to confirm someone's paying attention, tot, describing something painfully awkward, and chuff, meaning cool or impressive. But it's written with two F. Far from being meaningless chatter, youth words often reflect broader social dynamics, from digital expression to identity politics. Recent winners like Smash from 2022 and Goofy from 2023 reveal how pop culture and internet language reshape communication. The final winner will be revealed on October 18th at the Frankfurt Book Fair, after a top 3 vote starting in September. Until then, it's up to Germany's teens to decide what's truly tough in 2025.
I have to say, I'm 21 now, so a little bit above the age group, but I think this is the first year that I know almost all the words, so I'm really interested in which one is gonna make it this year. Of course, we're gonna keep you updated as soon as the new votes are in.
We are with Andrea Lunescu. I'm guessing you're from Portugal.
Nope, actually I'm from Romania. And there are two tell signs. ESCU at the end of the name is usually a sign that it's Romanian. And if that's not a given, you won't probably see Andrea written with double E's. It's not a mistake, it's literally my name. And that's another telltale that it's Romanian. So I have two signs in my name. Now you know.
Now we all know that you come from Romania. This is the way that we can know where and how we can understand who's from Romania. Mm-hmm. And you decided to make Berlin your home.
Indeed, I did.
How did you arrive here? How has it been for you? Because as far as I also know, you decided for, I think, 10 years or so to start your own business, your own freedom, and yet also your own path, which is, of course, a courageous step.
Yeah, I think definitely my path, but my solopreneur venture actually started only in around 2023, 2024. But I moved to Berlin in 2015. And I have to say, I even wrote about it because it's something that is a story which is so dear to my heart. I came here first in 2014 for my birthday for 3 days, completely on a whim. I was living in England and it was a cheap holiday, if I'm honest. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to go to Berlin. And we traveled here for a couple of days, 3 days, to be honest. I didn't see any of the Berlin, what makes Berlin, Berlin. I didn't see any of that. I just saw the touristic stuff, supermarkets, you know, whatever. But when I landed, and this is not a joke, when I landed and I arrived in front of the hotel, I remember telling my partner at the time, I looked around, it was in Charlottenburg, and it was a really cheap hotel. And I looked around and I said, I need to move here, like so determined, with no evidence, nothing. It just felt like home. I have no way to explain it. If someone ever fell in love at first sight, but like really get struck by lightning style, that's how I felt when I arrived. And then I moved back. I went back to the UK, lived my life and what so not. But I started learning German. I was looking at flats in Berlin. I was obsessed, literally obsessed. Life happened. And in 2015, I moved. I don't even know how I made it happen, but I did. So I moved here in 2015. It feels like home. Honestly, no shame to my country home men, but more than Bucharest has ever felt like home to me, which is interesting. And yeah, and the business side of things, I've always been a corporate girly for 15 years until 2023, I think, was the first venture, because that's when I started the Talent Crunch community with two co-founders at the time. And in 2024, I started the consulting business as well on top. So that's when that started. But my Berlin love story started in 2015.
So one of the main things we have heard a lot in the podcast is definitely how A, to make a German friend, B, how to get a flat, and C, how to get a job. And for that, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions, but before we do, we're going to go on a short music break. We're back with Andrea, and as I said before we went on a music break, was that, yeah, love is a big thing in Germany, how to get a German dating person that wants a date, or how to get a flat, how to get a German friend, and of course, how to get that job. How can I understand the German market job? And this is where Andrea comes in, because she's a specialist in this.
I would like to think so. I think I don't want to overhype it. I think let's put a bit of a frame around it. Are we talking about someone who is already physically living here, or are we talking more about someone who is considering relocating here?
That is indeed a very good question, or very good point out, because if you're hearing us from a perspective that you want to come to Germany, and I know we have someone very special that she's always hearing us, she's in Canada and she wants to come to Berlin, but in this case let's talk about those who are already here, who might be just arriving or trying to find something better for themselves.
Okay, perfect. I think the second layer I would like to put in is to make a very clear and transparent difference between how it will be for someone to find a job in a city like Berlin. And then if we extrapolate this, let's say east in a way, and how it is for someone to try to look for a job or find a job in other big cities in Germany, but not Berlin, because I think this makes a huge difference already. So the cultural aspect of things is very blurry in Berlin, which is quite helpful for internationals, myself included. We are lucky enough to have this still a tech ecosystem, which generally attracts or is more open to English-speaking capabilities rather than just German-speaking capabilities, whereas not exactly the same in Stuttgart, in Munich, in larger cities in Germany. That's one thing to keep in mind. And the second thing to keep in mind is, at the same time, that might be attractive for people, but at the same time, you have Berlin, which is still poor. The money is extremely divided and split. And if you would be looking for something a bit more stable, longer term, funny enough, I think this applies also to personal relationships in a similar way. But if you're looking for something more stable, more long term, and also a bit more, I wouldn't call it strategic, but maybe meaningful or powerful, then the other bigger cities may be a better option. But for that, you would most likely need to be fluent in German to some level. So this is something that people living in Germany already need to really consider. Do they want to better their German? Are they able to? Do they have the time, the money, the capability to do so? If that is the case, then you will open yourself doors in other places. But let's get some high level advice. I think looking at where we are today, and I can't ignore the topic of artificial intelligence because it surrounds us all. A lot of us are frightened. I mean, I spend my life in this every single day, day in, day out, talking about artificial intelligence, how it's going to take our jobs, how do we upskill, and so on and so forth. But there is something that we sometimes forget. It is something called collective intelligence. And it's something that you do very well with your organization. And it's something that I hope I do well enough with both my companies, especially with the community side. It's community. This is something that no technology is able to take from us, even though it is said now that we use artificial intelligence and ChatGPT and so on mainly for companionship. We still, when we come together as humans, is where the magic happens. So what I would encourage everyone looking for a job or looking to change or looking to maybe even upskill or get into the market, I would encourage you to get out there in person. And networking has probably become even more important than it was before. Imagine that we are in a sea of people combined with a sea of AI agents, combined with a sea of shareholder value and corporates who want to make money fast. And what needs to happen is that you, regardless of your skill set, of your interest and profession or professional background, you need to be the person that they think about first. when it comes to, you know what, I need to hire someone for my account management. So-and-so just left or is going on maternity. You need to be the person, the face that comes in. I promise you, it will not be the logo of the newest AI tool that will come to their mind, but it will most likely be your face. It's like, oh, I've spoken to so-and-so. Get yourself out there. I can't stress this enough. And I personally didn't realize this myself until really late, which is a shame, because if I would have, I think I would have been in a very different place. So if someone can learn from my mistakes, I think this is the one thing that I would strongly advise. And if you want to go deeper, definitely we can. I don't know if this is now the time and the place, but you tell me.
Community matters, and that's definitely something that AI will not replace. Becoming a networker is also hard work. We're talking about, weirdly enough, work, but somehow it's very love related, because if you want to have something stable, don't work in Berlin, because the money is also not as it is in other places. And that brings me to the question, how to talk about money when it comes to getting a new job? Because I'm not so sure. I'm going to give a quick example here. As a foreigner and as an international, this was Mexican, this is Latin America. When you put your services or as a consultant or you want to another job, you already know what you would like to have. But when it comes to the moment where you have to talk about it, you say something less because you're kind of afraid to say that my services are 500 euros for to say something, but we can do 400. Well, just because it's you, we can do 300. But that is like a very typical Latin America mentality. And something someone said to me was like, you're in Germany. You will have to go even higher and say like, I'm this worth. So I'm going to say 1,000 because you're worth 1,000. And if they don't have the money, they will say like, we want you, but we just have 700. And then you can start talking about that. But that Switzerland, the mentality is not something that I've learn to know, to be honest, but how would you help me out here?
Let's look at it from two lenses. Lens number one is when we go for interviews for jobs in companies, because I think they're quite different. You can interchange from one to another, but if people who are listening would like to go for permanent jobs or jobs in companies, right, where you have this question in the interview, it depends who asked the question. But let's assume that the recruiter or the hiring manager will ask you the question, okay, but how much money do you want for this job? And then we have these individuals who for some reason believe it's better to say, I'm open, I don't know, we can discuss, we can negotiate. And I get it, right? We are faced with this and we may really want the job or really need the job and we don't want to ruffle any feathers. So we stay, we lay low, we don't want to disturb the peace in a way, right? What we could do instead, for example, is we know what we need to earn in order to survive and to have a good, decent life. So we know that already. I promise you, there are individuals with so much audacity. They would go in, they know how much they need or how much they want, and they add 15,000 more on top, and they say the number out loud with no shame. So these people exist. But if you know what you earn, but what you would like to earn, but you're shy or you're afraid that you will ruffle feathers, one way you can frame this is with a lot of honesty, as it were, for my current living circumstances and for me to be comfortable and happy in this job and give you my loyalty for the long term. I assume you have salary bands. I would love to speak about that because usually companies maybe do, or they have some restrictions, right, that they can go in between. But for me, I would share a range where I would feel comfortable between X and Y. Again, I'm very open to talking about it, and then silence. You can let them see how they react, and then you can say, but tell me about your salary bands. How do you position this role within your organization? And then what is the path to grow, right? What is your usual incremental salary increase, for example? That's one way in the company, and it's a very short version. And the other side of things is when we are consulting or where we are solopreneurs or entrepreneurs. I learned something recently because I am not very different from you, Sigrid, in that regard. Coming from Romania, I was also taught that We don't ruffle feathers. We don't go in with the big bucks. I have to know my place. I'm also a woman, right? So you have to know your place. You have to, yeah. It's a different podcast.
Yeah, I am trying to really, yeah, we will definitely have a part two because there are a lot of things we should talk about.
Yes. And this, I learned something recently. And what I mean recently, today is Thursday. I learned this on Monday. Somebody told me, and I'm forever grateful to him. He said, if you put the number as an hourly rate, you're not a real solopreneur. His name is Dennis. I give him all the credit for this. What you need to do is you put a package in place. So this is going to cost you 1,500 euros. The end. It may take you half an hour to do it, or it may take you 2 days to do it. It doesn't even matter because for you to do it in half an hour, you have all the years of experience in the background. You have the network, you have the tools, you have everything in place, which you built to get that done in half an hour. And I was like, I was mind blown. I said, God dang, I never thought about it like that. So this changed my perspective a lot from Monday to today, right? But if we have to do hourly rate, I understand that. And people will go and say, okay, for this, this is my hourly rate. This is how much I would like to get paid. And they will go potentially, oh, but that's too expensive. And then you say, yes, I understand. But what is the blocker for you? Is it truly the budget? Is it that you don't see the value that I add? Is it the fact that you think you won't have the buy-in from the management? What is the blocker? And then you need to try and understand what the blocker is and then not combat, but work towards that particular side of things. Ideally, we do this before we get to the numbers, so we understand the potential blockers ahead of time. If we haven't had the chance to do it, or we simply forgot or they skipped our mind, then we can also do it after that. And it's okay to agree with them when they say, oh, it's too expensive, or so-and-so gave me a better quote. One thing I would encourage people not to do is to say, then go with the other ones. This is so short-sighted, and that's not the way to approach this, right? But I hope these two, let's say, ways of approaching it, corporate versus solopreneurship, might help some of the audience.
Andrea, we've been already talking about a couple of things regarding jobs, and maybe it is kind of far-fetched, but there's this thing that is always in the top of my mind when I start applying to a new job. And it is the fact that I've heard that women are always trying to fit 100% or 90% of the job description. Whereas men, they say like, oh yeah, 50%, whatever, I will do it. And they will apply for a position even higher that they know they can get. And sometimes they do. And is that true?
Yes, it is true. And there is way more nuance to that as well on top. So you have the nuance of gender diversity. You have the nuance of cultural diversity. If you look at, there is this book from Erin Meyer, which I hope that by now more and more people get to know, Culture Map, it's called. It is absolutely fantastic. And for individuals, especially when we are immigrants, we should understand that very well, first and foremost, so that we can also help educate the individuals that we are, the people that live in the country we are going into, so to speak. But yes, it's much more nuanced than that. But in general, we do observe this tendency that women hold back. It is societal. It is years of oppression. I mean, we can talk about it for ages, right? Why this is happening. It is the current environment that we're in. Is it the culture that we're in, right? The German culture is not necessarily the most open-hearted and welcoming. And this also adds a layer of complexity for women versus men. But it's not just that. There are also really a lot of men. And now you add the cultural aspect of it. So think inheritance, think race, think ethnicity, that they also find themselves in the same position. So it's not just gender versus gender. It's intersectional. It's not just the one thing that would have a high impact on this. But if I am to just put a blanket on it, yes, it's very much the case that we seek to have all the dots in place, all the T's crossed, before we actually go into something, because we are a bit more risk adverse than our counterparts are, in a way.
What would you say is kind of the typical, and yes, I'm stereotyping here, cultural shock when you start working for a company in Germany? And I know they're the very big international ones, but they're also a little bit more German ones. I mean, for me, it was definitely, and as an example, the idea that I can have a sick day. We don't have six days in Mexico. If you have a sick day, then that means something is wrong with you. So you go with the flu. And I got sent back a couple of times because like, no, I don't feel well, but it's okay because it shows that you're loyal to your company and it doesn't matter how much you're feeling bad, you're going to go to work. And here in Germany was like, go back, sick leave.
That's a positive one. I don't want to stereotype or generalize too much. I think the example I will give is not as positive, but it's a personal example, is the struggle. I wouldn't say the lack of inclusivity, but the struggle with inclusivity. I think that my personal observation was that some organizations do not understand that they are in a place where they need immigrants to help better their companies and just get workforce in the first place. And therefore, when you have expats or immigrants in your organization, you need to make a bit of an effort to include them. And the first inclusion point is language barrier. And I think this was, for me, a really hard thing to go through. I understand German very well, so you can't gossip around me, but I'm not fluent. So I struggle to speak business German. And when you're not included from a language perspective, it feels extremely exclusive and it makes people feel very uncomfortable. So I think this was for me one of the saddest things I observed. The rest of them, I think, also because I used to live in the UK, I hadn't had such a massive cultural shock from that perspective. But if I was to compare it with Romania, where same, right, with what you said, oh, I had 2 sick days this year. It will show up in my performance review. Or another thing is, this is something I like. They work. And when they work, right? Some of them. Put their head down and you have hours of work. Do that in Romania. You have 25 coffee breaks, 15 cigarette breaks. You speak to everyone on the floor. 5 p.m. comes, you realize, oh, I have to pick up my kids from Kita or whatever it might be. Off you go. 2 years later, the job is still not done. I say, this is not going here, right? And I'm like, I love that. Because I think somewhere inside of me, there is a little German really happy when it sees this is happening. So this is a positive. And there was also a negative.
At the end of the day, this is why we're here. We are trying from our different areas to push for integration, to push for understanding. Of course, it's complicated for them as well. And I will use this opportunity to shout out to an event that I went to. And it was an official event from an official German thing. And everything was in German first. It was for internationals, but everything was in German. And then it was someone very important on stage. They were like, yeah, we want to talk about now a successful story. And this is Hamid, and he knows how to speak in German, but we're going to be talking very slow for him to understand. And if you have any question, please don't hesitate to answer us. As he was a 5-year-old, and I was probably one of the only internationals there, that I was very close to just going on stage and saying like, nah, this is not the way. This is condescending. You're here to talk about a successful story. And you're in front of a HR audience. And for those who are understanding, there's a barking dog behind me. I'm so sorry about that. But we're here, and this is an HR team. If the HR people think they have to talk with us in this way, there's never going to be an integration. We're here. We might not understand everything 100%, but don't try to take it down and think that we're like, I don't know, like 5-year-old, because we're not. And I'm sorry, I really need to point this out because I was, as they say in German, entsetzt. I was very, very frustrated with this event because it was in front of every German person in the room with HR teams. And this was the way they talked to us. But anyhow, let's go to the positive note because you do consultings. So let us know how we can find you, how we can be part of your community. Tell us all your details because it's been amazing to talk with you and be part of your community.
Yeah, thank you. I like being given the chance to talk about it. I must say, I just purchased my domain for the community, which is now talent-crunch.com, like a win. So that's for the community. If you check the website, then from there you see the entire ecosystem. The community has a huge ecosystem of social media platforms, newsletter, Slack, communication, events. It's a lot that has been done with this. And then you have the second piece, which is the consulting arm. The website there has been coined from when it first got open, which is theprincipalrecruiter.com. I think the easiest thing to find them both is on my LinkedIn, if I'm honest. Probably if you put my name in Google and then Berlin, it will pop up. I have a picture with similarly colorful things that you've seen right now on your screen, Sigrid. They will find a picture with colors in the background. That's me.
Andrea, thank you so, so much. This was great. We will do a part two. And there's so much to talk about, of course, about what you do and more about Berlin. But for the moment being, thank you so much.
Thank you, too. I loved it.
Plus 49. Ask a German.
My question is, why does it feel so hard for you to trust new people in your friendship groups, to include new people in the friendship groups? Maybe this is something somebody asked before, but I honestly, this is something I struggle with. And even if I ask German acquaintances, I can't say I have German friends, if I'm honest. Maybe one. But this is something I don't get. And realizing that I'm surrounded by so many people from all over the world, but I am in Germany and I haven't managed to secure a really long-standing German friendship makes me feel awkward. But I then thought, have I done enough? Have I put enough effort into this? Yes, I have. But it feels like pulling teeth when you're trying to build a bond, a friendship bond. And I think I'm too old for that. So I'm curious, what is it? What is stopping you for trusting or opening up to internationals?
I think this is one of the most frequently voiced frustrations among newcomers in Germany. Why are Germans often so reserved? And how do you actually make German friends? While the latter is a bit harder to answer, there are different viewpoints on the first. One explanation often pointed to is historical. Generations grew up in a country where mistrust was institutionalized, from the Nazi regime to East Germany's Stasi surveillance state. Being open with strangers wasn't just uncomfortable, it could be dangerous. That caution may not be a conscious part of people's behavior today, but the cultural echo is still there. Many Germans are raised to separate private and public life, and to only fully open up in established, trusted relationships. But there's also a deeper cultural value at play, privacy. Germans tend to place strong emphasis on personal boundaries, both their own and others. Asking too many personal questions early on can feel intrusive, and jumping into deep conversation without first building trust might come off as pushy rather than friendly. So while you may feel you're being warm and open, a German might interpret it as too much too soon. But this doesn't mean Germans don't want friendships. It just means that they approach them differently. Many Germans see friendship as something serious, not just someone to grab drinks with, but someone who will help you move houses, visit you in the hospital, or take care of your pet when you're away. That bar is high, and it takes time and consistency to earn their trust. There's also the language factor. Even if many Germans speak English well, they may not feel confident expressing themselves on an emotional level in another language, which can lead to shyness, silence, or withdrawal. So, what's the takeaway? Building friendships in Germany often requires patience, persistence, and showing up.
join a Verein, take a class, or simply keep showing up to the same events or cafe. Once you're in, you're likely to have a loyal, long-term friend. But getting there might take longer than you're used to.
And that's it for this week's edition of Plus 49. A big thank you to our guest Andrea for sharing her insights on navigating the Berlin job market, salary negotiation, and building confidence in your career path, whether you're starting out or ready for a change. As always, you can find all our past episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Plus 49 and don't forget to follow us on Instagram at plus_49 for extras, updates, and behind-the-scenes content. Thanks once again for listening. Stay dry out there and see you next week, hopefully with more sun.